Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Alexandra Silber,
who plays Sally Bowles, and
Mason Alexander Park,
who plays the MC. Two legendary roles of theater here at Olney Theater Center, which I'm sitting here in the theater, and it's beautiful here, guys. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Anytime.
Thank you.
All right. So, obviously, cabaret, iconic. We all have seen it a million times and love it. But when did you first, one at a time, when did you first discover it? I guess you watching Liza Minnelli, then we'll get with you with Joel Grey. But when did you first see it?
My very first exposure to it was the 1998 revival, the Roundabout revival, starring Alan Cumming and Natasha Richardson. It was the second Broadway show I ever saw. I was a 14-year-old in the mezzanine and profoundly moved / deeply scarred.
It's a dark one to start.
It is. And you know, that was an incredible year, incredible Broadway season, Lion King, Ragtime, Scarlet Pimpernel, amazing, now really iconic shows. But yeah, it was eye-opening, and definitely something that you realize you're being intoxicated and entertained, and then slowly the creeping in of the sociological message.
Awesome. How about you?
For me,
you're playing the iconic Joel Grey part, but I think he won an Oscar for that part, actually. When did you first discover it?
Mine was similar. It was that production of the show. I didn't see it in New York City, but when I was in high school, around the same age, I saw like YouTube videos of it, and so I watched Alan Cumming's version at the Dahmer Warehouse, which is where they started creating that version of the show in London before it came. And they, I guess, recorded the whole thing to put, I don't know if they aired it on television or something.
It was on BBC.
It's like a pro shot. It looked like it was for, you know, PBS or BBC. And I remember watching that and just being like, this is some of the best theater I've ever seen. And it was dark and twisted and like something I wanted to be a part of. So then after that, I watched the movie and I pored over any amount of research that I could find for it when I was in high school.
Awesome. Well, before we dive too far in, I've been assuming that audiences know the story, but let's pretend that someone hears this, has no idea what it is. Who wants to hit them with the premise, the plot summary, if you will?
Cabaret is a musical by John Kander and Fred Ebb, written in 1964. Which is based on the Christopher Isherwood novella. And it basically is about the rise of fascism in the Weimar Republic from 1930 to 1931, all under the parameters and through the lens of a nightclub called the Kit Kat Club in Berlin.
Awesome. And the MC is?
The MC is the master of ceremonies of the event and of the evening in the theater, if you will. And he's a very elusive, like, weird, creepy, androgynous person that sort of tries to bring the audience in and is like a ghostly narrator almost. The MC is kind of both within the story, but also a lot of times it's a lot of commentary on things that are happening, you know, socioeconomically, things that are happening politically at the time. Like, the MC kind of gets to be this conduit of what's happening in Germany as well as what's happening in the story. So it's fun because you get to play with a lot of different colors. You don't necessarily have to be, it's not like necessarily the most plot-driven book part, right, of the show. So you kind of can come in and bring something new to each number because it's all about a different part of the show, and you're not really a real person most of the time anyway. So it gives you a lot of freedom to play with different colors in your like actor and vocal, right, coloring book.
Yeah, you're sort of in, you know, Sally's is a character sort of in the, yes, in the A story, but you're, yes, while in the story, you're almost like the conscience of the play too. Like, you're talking to the audience and, you know, saying, this is a warning, guys, kind of a thing. Speak to what is it sort of warning against? You know, we're saying it's the rise of Nazi Germany. Just talk about that social commentary a little more. Someone want to take, if the audience walking away, yes, there is a little bit of a gut punch element to, you know, what we take walk away with. It's not all sunshine and rainbows here. It is a watch out kind of a message.
Absolutely. I think Cabaret is a play that is about the price of complicity, the price of a neutral stance in an increasingly antagonistic world. And it is an answer to the question, how did this happen? And I think one of the most important things about the piece itself, along with our production, is that while the specificity of Cabaret is rooted in the history of Germany, it's universal always, but particularly prescient right now in a divided America, particularly profoundly displayed just outside Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, about when bigotry and hatred looms, what are you as an individual going to do about it? And what I think is really special about our production is it doesn't beat you over the head with the historical aspects of the piece. It really does universalize and make very contemporary how real this problem still is. Bigots aren't born. They're built. They're taught. And no spoilers, but in our production, we definitely confront the audience head on at the very in the very last 60 seconds.
Ooh, I like that teaser. We won't spoil what it is, but awesome. Awesome. Well, I mean, we're sitting here and I can see the stage, but just try to describe visually, you know, and this is radio, so paint a visual picture with your words if you can. You know, you think the Bob Fosse, you know, the dance, you know, the chairs and the bowler hats and all that kind of stuff. But sort of describe, you know, the set and sort of the atmosphere of that Kit Kat Club.
Well, aesthetically speaking, for our production, I think all of the designers, they heavily researched a lot of dance halls in particular and a lot of cabarets that were a little more decadent and a little more...
Divinely decadent.
Yeah, exactly. Divinely decadent, a little more, you know, just upper class. Because I think a lot of the versions that people have in their head beyond just the film, like the stage version, tends to go for something that's a little grittier and a little grungier and dirtier, which is a great idea and a great choice and has been done a million times. But I think what this brings us back to and brings our version back to is this idea that you can easily get sucked into the beauty of it all, and in here life is beautiful. Like that is... it actually makes sense in our production when they discuss it, and so it's intoxicating and it's very enticing, and as an audience member you tend to forget what you're watching because you're seeing all these beautiful decadent costumes and everyone, it looks beautiful and stunning, and you're just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm watching a musical about, you know, X, Y, and Z. And that's part of the structure of the piece. It's meant to do that. It's meant to suck you in and then kind of pull the rug out from under you. And a lot of my role is designed that way as well. So it's very helpful for me to have, like, the beautiful red curtains and these giant chandeliers. I mean, there's six stunning chandeliers that Al knows where they're from, but
We rented them from Washington National Opera.
Really?
Yes. So that's the level of decadence, really, is, you know, the bel canto beauty. And one of the, just to add to what Mason said, I think something that's really interesting is when you have a seedy Kit Kat Club, as the rise of fascism and the Nazis start to take over Berlin, a seedy nightclub is the kind of nightclub they would probably have destroyed or repurposed for an office, which definitely did happen. This is the kind of club, and you'll see in our production, that the Nazis are proud to take over. They're proud to have ownership of something that is so beautiful. And further, just to sort of also say, I think that the MC functions as a contemporary political cartoon slash late night comedian that takes
the satirist.
Yeah, the satirist that takes liberties to explain, comment upon what's happening sociologically. And that becomes really profound, where at one moment it's lighthearted and then suddenly it can no longer be. Okay. So I think what's happening here is you're seeing a really, really beautiful world. Probably a very expensive entry fee, and something that you feel quite sad to see decay.
How about costume-wise? What are we going to see?
I have a lot of costumes that I adore that I want to steal.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's all Al and I talked about in the beginning. We were like, okay, so which ones are we taking?
Yeah. Missing. All of
our wardrobe. Costumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really beautiful. It also makes the tracking of the show very difficult because when you're not on stage, you tend to be backstage, right. Changing into another really complex outfit. And that has made my thought process, like, I had this idea that I would have time to go down to my dressing room and, you know, like, chill in the 10 minutes that I'm not in the show. And that's just not true anymore. But they're really beautiful. They look like the pictures. If you look at any kind of like picture book about the Weimar Republic and about entertainment at that time, like, it's all these extravagant burlesque outfits that were stylized, and we have, you know, a Marie Antoinette number, and we have like all of these really beautiful stylizations that instead of just the normal Kit Kat girl in lingerie kind of vibe, it's very much so like, oh, we are doing burlesque numbers, and we're doing, you know, numbers in boats and with like feather fans and things. And it feels very Candor and Ebb in that mm-hmm. sense, because that's like harkens back to Chicago and harkens back to like so many like visuals that I think of in musical theater. I'm like, oh yeah, that is very 1920s like vaudeville. And we kind of have a little like German vaudeville vibe in some of our pieces.
Gotcha.
And I would add that there's a Kendra Rye has done an incredible job designing them. And I think what's really been incredible is that the world that Mason just described is in stark contrast to the actual people mm-hmm. that we meet, the people in the book scenes who are really struggling with this. Really struggling economically after the First World War. Germany was in an incredibly vulnerable position. People were incredibly desperate, but doing their best. And I think one of the things that Kendra really grasps quite beautifully is that even when people are poor, they are still making the best of their lives. They can still be vain. They can still want to look pretty and have expression through their, you know, of course, these aren't costumes for characters. Kendra really grasped that these are their clothes. And I think you really see that the club, in everything that she's designed and executed, the club really is an escape from how desperate the world is around them.
Awesome. Well, we've gotten this far in, but we haven't even said it's a musical. iconic numbers that are going through, you know, money, money, money,
yeah.
Everything. But why don't you run through a couple of, remind our listeners some of the famous songs.
As you just said, Money, Money, and Maybe This Time, both of which were actually added to the motion picture in the 70s.
They weren't in the original show.
They weren't in the original 1964 show. This is actually a really interesting musical in that there's several versions of it. And the Donmar Warehouse revival from 1993 changed hugely when it made it to the West End and Broadway in 1998. So those songs, of course, the iconic song Cabaret, which most people know the Liza Minnelli version of.
You got to start by admitting From Cradle to Tomb.
Oh,
isn't that long step?
Oh, I think I've got a rival here. The opening number of Ilkamen, Two Ladies. There's a lot of familiar songs. And I think what the audience will be really excited to see is some of these songs are sometimes presented out of context. And when you see them in the context of the story, they pack a real punch.
Awesome. Do you have a favorite number you get to do?
One of my favorite songs to sing actually is another edition. It was written as like street music when they were doing the first production of it, and they kind of had this idea that Sally and Cliff would like walk by a prostitute on the street corner like singing a song to herself. Or himself, and it was called I Don't Care Much, and it didn't make it into the actual show, and then they put it back in that 1993 Donner, actually no, they put it back in to the Joel Grey revival in the 80s, and he just sang it like passing by on the stage while Sally and Cliff had a scene, and they've kind of reintroduced it into the musical when they did the third revival of it. And it's definitely my favorite. It's like the only time that I get to be a real person in a sense and have like an inner monologue that isn't necessarily just commentary. And so I enjoy it for that reason. It's a big swan song. It's my Judy Garland moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your Judy Garland moment? Obviously the Liza Minnelli big moment.
I think for me it's the title song. And I think also it's the title song is a, it feels like an empowering moment as Sally is Sally is not our protagonist. Our protagonist is definitely Cliff Bradshaw, the American quote-unquote novelist who never seems to manage to write a word. But Sally is our anti-hero. And I think in that moment, we really see the anti in the anti-hero. We really see that this woman that we have found sort of despicable but also irresistibly charming and warm melt down, and with her, the world around her. And I feel it's exhilarating to sort of ride the roller coaster down, if you will.
Awesome. Well, we want audiences to come ride the roller coaster. Just in closing, take us out. You know, why should they come? If they've seen it, you know, in one of the iterations, and, you know, why should they come again? Or if they've never seen it, why come out and check out this one?
I think our version of the show is very special in the sense that, like what Al said earlier, it doesn't necessarily have to hit anything over the head in order to pack a punch. We're kind of allowing the audience to really listen to the words again in a way that just the world around you changing informs the way that you intake art and the way that you listen to things. And, you know, this show has been in my life for so, so very many years, and I've seen so many different versions of it from, you know, the recent Broadway revival to, you know, the tours and everything. And to do it now, it has a very different meaning than it would have 4, 5, 6 years ago. And I'm hearing things in a way that I never would have, just because now it is less like historical to me. I mean, it still exists as a historical piece, but I can hear things within a context of which, like, oh, I would say that. Like, I've heard people say that today, and I literally was having a conversation with someone the other day when they said, like, that exact thing. Right. And that, to me, is unbelievably, I mean, terrifying but special, because we don't get the chance to work on a lot of pieces that can hold up for that long of a time period, and especially still continue to incite change. And, like, everyone that's come, audience member wise like, they tend to leave, and we've done talkbacks, like, on Saturdays, and they tend to just, like, they're completely drained by it and have this feeling of a need to do something about what they've seen. And that doesn't happen often theatrically. Like, usually, you know, musical theater is entertainment, and it can be beautiful, and it can be stunning and exciting, but this has all of that, and also has, you know, a real, real message about something that is relevant to things that we're all going through now.
Can I add something?
Yeah, go for it.
I think this is a classic piece of musical theater and a classic piece of theater, full stop. You will see beautiful costumes, hear a 17-piece orchestra, a perfectly cast production of this classic, but you'll also see why it is a classic. And not only will you be entertained, hopefully you'll also be moved, and most importantly, galvanized to leave the theater and do something.
Awesome. Sally, MC, thank you so much. Again,
Auf
everybody.
Abianto.
Again, everybody, Cabaret at Olney Theater Center. Check it out now. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.